I'm Simon. I work professionally with FPGAs. And I'm at the beginning of my career, so I had this problem of figuring out what an FPGA is and how it works on the inside. And that's my main motivation for this hobby project, to invent my own FPGA architecture. So it's really not performant or useful. It's just about reinventing the wheel and teaching you how an FPGA works. But quickly, any of you who sit here right now, who knows what an FPGA is? Ah, that's good. Who could explain it in 1, 2, 3 sentences what it is? That's a lot less. So I'm happy to hear to do that. But first, before we go into what is an FPGA, because it turns out it's quite tricky, even for us who work with it daily, so gets explained like this, because we do use very, very old and ugly languages. We'll get to that as well. So again, my motivation for this is it was fun, now it's kind of done, and I don't want to do any more of that, except for this presentation. But I get to show you this fun little project. And it's sort of on the same spectrum as other funny projects that don't have any real use, like building a computer in Minecraft, or building the 8-bit CPU on the breadboard, which I built some years ago. And that was my main inspiration for this, because why not build an FPGA like that? And as it turns out, I'm not the first person to attempt this. So there has been few attempts at this project. I'm going a bit of a different route than this project, a bit of a more elaborate way and more towards modern FPGA architectures. And I also want to answer the question, why do you even need an FPGA? We have CPUs or, I don't know, ASICs. And the FPGA is a special type of ASIC, so I hope everyone knows what a CPU is. So that's when you have a product, but you don't know the application yet. You want to deliver the application later as software. So something like Turing completeness, and it will be able to do anything that you code. The other end of the spectrum is an ASIC, so an application-specific integrated circuit. And that's when you know exactly what the chip is going to do, and it shall never do anything else besides that special task. But it's very expensive to develop an ASIC, and you only do it if you can put the development cost on several million products. Oh, by the way, there's another chair. Well. And somewhere in between, we have a spectrum of sort of specialized but still general purpose chips, one of which is a GPU, which is just a CPU but more tailored towards a use case. And towards the ASIC spectrum, we have the FPGA, which is a programmable hardware. So you do something in hardware, but you can reconfigure it, sort of. What does that mean? Get to that later. But the applications usually are somewhere where you need high performance, extremely high performance, but you don't have the sales of several million devices. That's usually something like video cameras or telecommunications or the defense industry with radar technology and places where you need signal processing. And that's usually the grade of FPGAs we have nowadays, which are very, very high-tech chips, which are very expensive, like that one. That's sort of the grade that I work with on a daily basis, which is not what I'm going to show now. So what's an FPGA? And I'm going to ask that with a simple question. How can we build any digital circuit that we want to? Picture the 8-bit CPU. So we take breadboards. We take the basic logic elements, and we stick them on there. And that's it. That's all we need. So we can then, you know, connect all of those. And then we get any digital circuit we want. We can make a CPU like that. What's the problem with that? Well, it's big, it's chaotic, and you need a lot of wires and hands to like plug it in and plug it out. You can't do that in silicon. It has to be there already. So what can we do? Of course, we shrink it all down to the circuit level. And we make the wires programmable. So the wires are already there. But later, we can program the switches to connect the wires. And for that to work, we need sort of a smart approach to the architecture of how we put the wires that are already there. So it's like a finite flexibility that we have there. And that's an FPGA. This is the very first architecture that was invented by Xilinx a few years back, because they had this idea of making a general purpose logic grid, logic element. So how did I approach this task of building my own FPGA? And some of you may be familiar from software engineering with, I don't know, Scrum or Agile or something. We don't have that in FPGA. We have the V model. Because you do have it. Because we have to deliver on the day that the delivery day is, so we can't usually ship updates. And that's why rigorous testing is already inside of most FPGA-related engineering tasks. And I adapted my journey a little bit like that. And we will go through these steps together. So at the very beginning, I was like, yeah, it would be cool to do this 8-bit breadboard CPU, but there's an FPGA, but that's way too complex. I can never do that. And then I started, well, maybe I can do it. So I started to think, what potential applications could I even run on this, like realistically? So 4-bit counter should be fairly easy. I can take two of those, and then I can add a number, and maybe do a BCD to 7-segment decoder. That's about it. And then if I'm a little bit smart, I can demonstrate clock domain crossing, maybe. But not an 8-bit CPU, so don't expect that. Next thing was the architecture design, which was heavily influenced by the use cases that I wanted to map onto the architecture. And I already started thinking of which chips could I use for the circuit board. And of course, simulation, if those chips would actually work with the desired architecture. So I started researching. I don't have to reinvent the wheel completely. I can use what others have thought of before. And then you can Google like FPGA architectures, and you see something like that. So you have this programmable logic block, and you have an interconnect in between. That's the picture that I found most interesting, because it has four very distinct elements that I will have to design. So in the middle, there's a configurable logic block. And then north and east, there's the connection box. And then the switch box. So I can connect the inputs and outputs of the configurable logic block. And I can route the signals around with the switch box. So these four elements I had to design to get my modular large FPGA. And I started with the most complex one, the CLB. And again, you can look at the data sheets of recent or older FPGAs, and they all look a little bit like that. So you have, in this case, four inputs, and you have a lookup table. So you can implement any Boolean algebra as a lookup table. And then you have some gimmicks like the carry chain. That's when you want to do additions. That's just an improvement for speed. But because I found that very interesting, I added it anyways. And then at the output, you have a register, because you need a clock, because you have signals that propagate throughout the chip. And you need deterministic timing. I'm not going to dive into that rabbit hole, but it's very important. So this is my approach, very similar. It starts with two lookup tables of 8-bit. I use some multiplexers to get a single bit lookup from four inputs. And then the carry chain and the register at the output. And a little bit on the input side that has to do with the interconnect architecture. And this is the adder tree. I'm also not going down that rabbit hole, but if you ever want to, you know, look at how this adder, this carry chain propagates the carry bit, this is 5 plus 13 equals 18. And I tested it, it works. And it doesn't look that different on current modern FPGA technology. This is a screenshot from the IDE that I use daily to program modern FPGAs. And you can see there's the lookup tables and the carry chain and a few other things. And then the green wires are the interconnect. And a bit larger, it looks like that. That's not what I was able to achieve. That's modern FPGA architecture. But this is also the inspiration why I used green LEDs, so to see which wires I activated and which features are enabled. After I had the CLB, I needed to design the interconnect. And that was, without a doubt, the biggest challenge in order to get this modular FPGA where that you can stack and build a big, big FPGA. And I always started to think about the applications. So here we have a 4-bit counter at the top left corner. And the signals are looped back to the input. So I can make a counter to add plus one to the input. And I also route the signal to two other logic blocks on the right side to get the BCT27 segment. And with that in mind, I thought, yeah, that's good. That's my architecture. But it wasn't easy, because this is how a modern FPGA interconnect looks like. So you have something like 6 or 7 signals on this switch box. And each cross point on that switch box is designed as 6 MOSFET transistors, which gives you maximum flexibility to route the signal anywhere. You can even route 2 signals next to each other in a corner. If I were to design this on a circuit board, I would have to design each of those transistors as this 2x2 millimeter, very small chip. And if you multiply that, you get close to 100 chips for only a 4-to-4 interconnect. And then I would need many of those, and I would need to manage everything in the bitstream, and I would need to purchase all of that and solder it. It's way too much work. And that's, at that point, I thought, no, that's impossible. I can't do it. And then finally, I settled for this very, very simple architecture, which allows me to gate signals with this stop switch in each direction, north, south, east, west. And I have a cross matrix, which is very basic, which allows me to route signals in a loopback or forward. And I used 4 signals because I have a 4 input lookup table. But I added 2 more signals to route other special signals like the chip select or, in addition, the carry bit. So now it was time for the PCB design. And for the interested hardware minds here, I will skip through these chips that I used. So it's 7400 logic ICs. This is the 8 input multiplexer, which is used to look up the bits in the lookup table. This is the carry chain with several 2 input multiplexers, an XOR, and then a large quad multiplexer, which can be used to enable the SUM or the regular FPGA lookup table output. And at the output, there's the latch, the register, and a few LEDs to show what the signal is doing. I routed it in KiCad. Love this software. And soon I had 4 circuit boards. And I didn't order yet. Of course, I had the simulation model. So I modeled each of those 7400 logic ICs in VHDL. And I also modeled transistors for the switch matrix. And the challenge here was you had input-output signals. So at simulation time, it was not clear in which direction the signal is going. And VHDL doesn't like that. Only Verilog, but not very later. So I stuck with VHDL and had to make ugly stuff to make it work. It worked in the end. So I can now generate test cases. But before we do that, we need to dive into the question of what's a bitstream, because we need to have a binary to configure that chip, and it's called a bitstream in FPGA engineering. And a bitstream is a binary that's loaded into static RAM of this IC, and each bit has a function to configure the hardware. So it can be lookup table content, as you see with the 16 bits here, but it can also be special features. So you have the sum enable, which is a zero, so we're not using the sum enable. And there's the register enable, which is set to one, so the signal will use the register output. And if you inspect this closely, one of the lookup tables, 8 bits, are set to 1 and the others to 0. So if you were to loop back the output back to the input, this would be an inverter, and it would toggle every time there's a clock input at the register. The bitstream on hardware is realized as a shift register, again, a 7400 chip. And I'm routing this in that direction through this assembly of the four blocks. And I need to track every single bit. It's very important to keep the documentation, because later, for the compiler, I need to map these bits to certain functions. So now I can generate test cases, which is another rabbit hole that I'm not going to dive into, because FPGA compilers don't really compile. They're highly sophisticated, and at the first step you do a simulation and then use a different compiler to do the actual mapping onto hardware, which takes timing into account, and then you can program it, and it's very complicated, and I just do this manually. So I'm gonna set each bit manually by the location from the Excel sheet, because I know how to map it. It's relatively simple, only 120 something bytes, bits for one slice. Yes. And then this Python script will output the bits into a bitstream.txt file, which I can use in my test bench to program the FPGA over this serial interface, SPI for the shift registers, and then I can run this virtual FPGA and get some results. That's the timing diagram. You see the big purple square thing, that's the SPI, and some of the bits are set in the bitstream. And then at the end, I actually have the inverter toggling, making me very happy and confident that the hardware will work. Now it's time for the PCB assembly. That's a screenshot from Don't Try This at Home, unless you want your kitchen to smell like solder fumes. You just have to cook chili con carne afterwards and you're fine. And then I have my hardware. And then I first tested the configurable logic block with an Arduino in the loop, so I could program the bits with SPI and read out the results. And the first thing I did, again, it's manually setting bits, but it in C instead of Python. And then I tested the lookup table. If my input vector maps to the output vector, and you can see there's a bit flip, obviously, which I didn't catch. So 1 and 0 is flipped. That's why I have beautiful mod wires on this PCB. And the embarrassing thing is I fixed it, forgot to commit, and ordered revision 2. So on revision 2, I still have this bug. Yeah. And then it was time for the final assembly, which is just sticking a bunch of them together and testing them. And then it's time for the integration and all the cool applications I pictured at the beginning. But no, now I have time to design a compiler. But it's not really a compiler, just something more user-friendly than inputting single bits. So kind of like assembly instead of binary. So I have this approach, so that I write one code and I get both a simulation bitstream and an actual bitstream for the Arduino that can be uploaded. So the simulation matches the hardware. And it looks sort of like this. I have an object with a matrix of slices. So the 0, 0 are the coordinates in the matrix of FPGA slices, and each slice has sub-objects, so the configurable logic block and the switch box and everything, and each of those have attributes like the register or the clock selection. And I can use this more human-readable code to enable bits. And I also made a thing to fill the lookup tables, because I need to define the behavior in the lookup table as well. So to get a hex number, which is something I can then enter into the C code. And here is an example of just one FPGA tile. The corresponding mapping of what it does in the hardware. And here you can also see the LEDs, which map out which features are enabled on the logic slice. And yeah, it's pretty much how I designed it in the block design. Here's another thing. So at the top, we have a 4-bit counter. So all of the 4 signals are routed through the switch box in a loop to get the counting. But they're also routed down to the bottom slice, which implements a fizzbuzz. So that's every time the number is divisible by 3 or 5, it will blink, fizz, or buzz. And then those signals are routed back up, so we have them next to each other with the top blue LEDs. Now we have a 4-bit counter. That's completely and utterly reinventing the wheel. By the way, for those who still wonder about the 8-bit CPU, remember, I just designed half of an 8-bit counter, so half of this. You could make an 8-bit CPU, but it would be huge, gigantic, and expensive. And another trick which FPGA engineers know about is how fast can I clock it. So I made a simple ring oscillator, which is an inverter without a clock, so it toggles by itself, and that's about 13 megahertz. So with a bigger design, it will certainly be slower. And that's about it, so next steps, kind of. I don't want to. I spent way too much time on this. But I have a few ideas, maybe someday. So now I only decide the inside, the very fundamentals of an FPGA. But an FPGA has to get all the data into the chip and out of the chip. So you have GPIO tiles, you have clocking, sometimes you have high-speed GPIO, especially with the modern FPGAs. So a lot of those features are still missing. And another rabbit hole to go down to is two very distinct features of modern FPGAs, because engineers figured out certain problems always use multiplications, so we could make a digital signal processing block, which is very good at multiplications. And using a logic slice with just 4 bits of memory is kind of a waste if you need a lot of memory, so you could just implement RAM blocks to have a lot of memory without using much of the space. Those are two features which could be added to this modular design. And I already started thinking, if I had them, how to make some more applications. For example, you could use a counter, which then counts an address of a block RAM with a sine wave in it, and then output the sine wave to a DAC to have like a waveform generator. Or you could even perform audio DSP if you have an ADC and a DAC, the input and the output, with 8-bit of quantization and with the 10 megahertz of maximum clock. It may work. Yeah. Well, that's for the future. So if anyone wants to read the whole story, I have made several blog posts. And the whole code and KiCad files and everything is on the GitHub that you can look at. And I hope you all now know what an FPGA is, and you could explain it to me in 1-2 sentences. I'm already done, so I have time for questions.
so expensive and yeah. it's so hard to get one with many gates.
Mike. There.
Now I know why they're so expensive and why it's so hard to get one with many logic gates.
Yeah, that's true. And if you know about the silicon lottery that you have in CPUs, where you make the same chip, but then you test it and maybe some cores don't work, and then you get an i3 instead of an i5 or i7, that's the same thing with FPGAs. If parts of it don't work, they sell it as a lower grade with less resources.
Thank you for your very great talk, and I was reading the title and thought, yeah, I have to see that, because I couldn't imagine how to get an architecture which is feasible to do in 7400 logic. So thanks a lot for that. Probably you have found it yourself. There's one very good thesis from a guy who designed an FPGA, I think his master or PhD thesis, describing each block. He targeted at an ASIC architecture, but he was going more or less in the same direction as, I want to understand how FPGAs work. And this thesis is really nicely describing each and every block, including the I.O. blocks, programmable I.O. blocks, the how you do the boundary scan chain as well, how you do the programming as you did. So some more features than you have implemented, but obviously he was not limited to 7400 logic. Yep. But it's a very good additional reading for everyone interested in how FPGAs actually work internally.
Absolutely.
Because as you know, the vendors are not very detailed in explaining the low-level details.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
So, thanks a lot.
Thank you for the comment. I did some research, and I'm not sure if we're talking about the same paper, but there are some screenshots of similar stuff as well, which discuss every level of the architecture.
So, in general, would it be possible to write some VHDL logic and synthesize like the configuration for your setup?
That's a very good thought, and I only had the beginning of that thought, because there are open source tools for Lattice FPGAs and stuff like EOSIS, and perhaps if you implement the backend, then perhaps that could work. But I think there's a significant challenge because of my very very limited interconnect architecture.
Can you maybe quickly explain what the difference with a typical ASIC architecture or the design for an ASIC architecture would be? Like, for an FPGA, you have all these registers that define which connections are where. But for an ASIC, I would expect that the architecture is much more efficient and more baked. But still, my understanding is that ASICs are not like a real bare bones chip design where you're basically physically laying out everything. It still has a fixed structure.
I have never worked on ASIC, but I've worked with people who design ASICs and I've seen their workflow. And from my understanding, it's you do actually design the chip from the ground up. So you have an empty square of silicon, and then you have tools, obviously, which map the hardware into that, the actual transistors and gates and wires. And the challenge is often similar to FPGA, because you do have physical distances and timing constraints. But it is also modular. So depending on the tool chain and the process of the silicon, you will have standard libraries for memories or other often used blocks that you can already implement that are already routed to guarantee timing. For example, ARM processors, you can buy the license for already routed silicon and then put that silicon on your ASIC and then design your special features around it. It's similar to an FPGA. Again, you have blocks that are already defined and you have to map your application into those. And only very, very rarely you actually design everything from scratch. And that's usually analog applications.